traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Here's the first note I ever got back on Bar Rescue on the pilot. It said, nothing else, but this is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. Do you even know how to make television? That was it.
That was the note you...
That was it.
Yo, that's not a note.
That was the note.
Jade Black was started out of frustration of...
Wait, what? What are you doing? Are you out of your gosh dang mind?
I'm opening with the sponsors, dude.
You are out of control, sir.
That's asking a lot.
I'll do it. Yeah. The shades are dubbed, dude.
Go ahead.
We're going to open with it. Hey, welcome back to Impulsive, the number one podcast in the world. Facts now validated by a Streamy Award that we won.
One award and opens with the sponsor read. Unfucking real, dude.
Oh, also, sorry, sponsors, our rates have doubled. Award-winning number one podcast in the world. Hit that subscribe button for me, please. We love you. Thanks, you guys, for listening to this podcast. We've had some great episodes in the past week, and it's coming up on the holidays, so we're really stacking them in, and hopefully you're bored over the holiday break and you can listen to us.
Which will probably happen. When you're chilling with your family back home, it's like, hey, dude, at night, you just got nothing to do.
You'd be surprised how bored you get over the holidays. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Especially in the Midwest. Oh, my God. Is that how it was for you, too? Just nothing to do.
Hey, speaking of Christmas, is it... It's probably about Christmas bonus time, right? Would you say?
Bonus.
It's a thing. Like, you incentivize your employees, your postman, your, you know, my maid. I'll pay back home in Connecticut a little bit of money for cleaning up the place.
Yeah, just
it's always good to trickle down a lot of that cash. Yeah,
you made
$4.5 million off a fight or something like that.
Right.
You'll just be like,
hypothetically,
which is right. Hypothetically, of course. You'd just be like, blah, 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 a little trickle down action.
Right.
Little democratic, like a little liberal trickle down.
I don't know about all that, but I am going to get a girl I care about a gift. I told her to send me her wish list. I'm finna drop 5 racks on this girl. Bro, she's been so nice to me over the years. Like, and I don't know. I've just been a little like selfish in my relationship with her.
What are you talking about?
I'll tell you, and you'll tell me if she deserves it.
Oh yeah.
She does.
She's
right?
Actually part of the reason we won the Streamy Award. I'm not gonna lie, he keeps my man calm as a cucumber.
Wow. She deserves it. Yeah, I know what you're thinking though. Like, Logan, why do you look so good? It's my sunglasses. Jade Black, that is. Jade Black started out of frustration of being unable to find any high quality fashionable frames at affordable prices, because any good quality polarized pair of sunglasses normally cost over $150 because all major brands are owned by one company. Jade Black uses Italian acetate from the same manufacturer as brands like Gucci, Ray-Ban, YSL, and the lenses are polarized, and they come with anti-reflective coating on the back to help prevent reflections, and they still only cost $49 and even less if you use the promo code Impulsive-10. That'll be $44. And they have a quiz to help you pick the best pair of sunglasses for your face if you don't know which ones will complement your face the best, which is cool because I have a long face. With these, I feel like some sort of like good looking police officer, Reno 911.
Dude,
type
it's crazy. You look like a sexual cop. That's what I was gonna say.
Which is super cool.
Yeah. Way different than sexual predator. Like, let's be honest, dude. Not even close to the same. Close.
They're also doing a giveaway of 15 AirPod Pros. So if you go to jblack.co and use the code Impulsive-10 to get yourself 10% off your purchase and a chance to win one of 15 pairs of AirPod Pros.
There we go.
Nice read.
I feel good.
Yeah, you're good. You're looking good. It's just everything's good.
Yo, it's the only time that a hangover could last multiple days is when you're hungover and you shoot 3 shows. So, like, technically, I'm hungover off one.
Let's just be honest. You guys are you guys are always hungover.
Relax.
I'm almost every start of the show, transitions into some amount of a hangover. So, at this point, are you hungover or are you just hung?
Why are we the way that we are?
I'm old. So I don't even drink out of control. I'm a pretty responsible drinker. I'm a very responsible drinker, except I'm 34 and my stomach just doesn't, it just can't hang like it used to, bro.
My key is water, dude. Like I drink so much water.
Yeah.
So I try to do one shot equals one bottle of water.
So smart.
And then we get home and then we ordered $250 worth of $250,000 worth of Carl's Jr.
Carl's Jr.
We should make that as a YouTube video.
Ordering
that might work. By the way, eating greasy foods along with the water consumption has, I think, is responsible for hangover prevention.
Oh, yeah.
For prevention?
Prevention, believe it or not. Because I hate to say it. I know you want to hear about lettuce and shit, but fucking... If you eat like a greasy ass, like In-N-Out cheeseburger, bro, right before you go to bed,
I think
and you drink a ton of water, I'm telling you, it doesn't work.
It soaks it up.
Exactly.
Yeah, it
does not
up.
Work with kale. I'm telling you.
Speaking
no,
of
I agree,
lettuce
I agree.
And vegans, so we did win the Streamy Award.
Yes.
And Brad, our Brad, producer, is that how I would call your role?
I think that's...
Engineer. Yeah, he's our engineer.
Yo, you pissed off our producer.
No, because I would say you're a showrunner.
Oh, thanks, bro.
No, yeah. No, that's not better.
You are. You're a showrunner. You run the show.
That's not better than a producer.
I have that on my resume, showrunner.
So yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Showrunner. You just got excited.
Listen,
about
anyways, our engineer Brad. No, look, he brought us donuts for winning the Streamy Award, and we got a vegan donut in there. So check it out. We got
vegan donuts?
No, we don't have vegan donuts. We got something better for the vegans that Brad also got us, and it's a head of lettuce.
You got me a head of lettuce,
there
Brad?
You go.
Dude, thank you.
For the vegans.
What the fuck? Sorry, I was sending a text message.
Bro, imagine me receiving these amazing looking like artistic donuts.
Look at
and
that.
Then Brad's like, don't worry, I didn't forget about
take
the vegans.
Take
are
some
you kidding me?
Take this, take
yo, get out of my face, dude.
That's a really good head of lettuce, bro.
You really
that's really good.
You took a massive bite.
How do you eat this? What the size is this fucking thing, dude?
It's a big marshmallow, bro.
Brad,
you also said you got us birthday cards?
Yeah.
But it's none of our birthdays.
No, just take a look.
Okay, this one's for... this one's... I'm assuming this one's Spencer's.
Yep, that's gotta be me. It looks like you, though.
This is Andre. For some reason, I'm the Monopoly man.
Nice. Of course Brad comes out with the most lit gifts. Like, of course he delivers.
Damn, he cleaned up Hallmark gift cards.
Oh my
Harrison
God,
Ford.
More? That's so nice.
Wow.
Yep.
Wait, are there handwritten?
You gotta be kidding me.
Wow, he wrote handwritten notes for all of us? I'm gonna read mine because I'm selfish.
Yeah. Can I show the front of mine as you open yours? Mine says, you're how old?
Oh my God. It's a Monopoly card. It says, get out of jail free. Just in case you get out of hand, and Brad wrote, for the next time you do something stupid online. Yeah. Thanks,
shit,
Brad.
Good shit, Brad.
Brad's a low-key savage back there.
Mine
just
said,
super quiet.
This looks like a job for the lasso of truth. Happy birthday. And then happy birthday is crossed out, and it says, let's be honest, you're probably someone's dad. Enjoy the DILF
wow.
life.
The DILF life.
He's definitely a daddy.
Facts. Wow.
Definitely a daddy.
Facts.
Mine says,
I'm a father of twins.
Mine says, proud of you for ditching the man bun.
Oh,
nice. Thanks, bro. Thank you.
I can't say
Brad,
I agree.
Brad, you
with
are
that,
not
man.
Good at shaking
really?
Hands, but you are very good at cards.
You're a
phenomenal
good gifter,
card
Brad.
Giver.
So yeah, I mean, let's go. We got one of streaming with the shit.
My question is, what do we do next?
Well,
like, we've been speaking this into existence for a long time.
I think we peaked. I think this is it.
Not even that,
damn,
but
is
where
this high school?
Where are we now?
Like,
fuck.
In the garage?
You just went too deep, dude.
Let me bring it back a little bit.
Well, the next guest could help with where to go.
Can I answer just last thing? Where are we now as this airs? Like, what? When is this right now? Like, they're seeing us. Where? When are we?
I feel like I'm going to be at Restoration Hardware. Something tells me.
When?
At Restoration Hardware.
Yeah, I'll be at Restoration Hardware.
I think I'm up in Napa Valley at this point.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't matter. I was thinking we might have been home or something like that, but I'm off by a few days. What else is fucking new?
It
just fuck me, right?
An exciting time. For sports, but none more exciting than the NFL sophomore sensation Lamar Jackson, who's redefining what it means to be a dual threat QB. Odds on Jackson to win the MVP race were at 50-1 to begin the season and have plummeted since, making my bookie's prop selection more attractive than ever. The next week we have one of the most anticipated stack you've seen. This is out of date.
Are
this
you
is out of
kidding
look
me?
My bookie, if you're gonna give me reads, I'll read them, but they gotta be up to date. What? All right, well, I'm assuming, the point is this. My bookie is still the best place to bet this sports season. And if you're one of a kind, Who likes to bet a little to win a lot? Try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. Mm-hmm. They have more lines and better odds for the player than any other sports book around. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. All you have to do is use our promo code Logan to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code Logan to activate the offer.
Or, by the way, if you're watching this and you're a fan of Hey Big Mike, you could use promo code MAJLAK, M-A-J-L-A-K, ooh, to activate the same offer.
Wow, that's tricky.
So why don't you decide?
That Silent J is going to fuck people up.
It's always.
It's MAJLAK.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah. I was just thinking with all these ad reads, it's that Christmas bonus is probably going to be
It's got to be quite juicy substantial, as fuck, dude. Between that, the fight back, and,
think.
To be honest, we talk about rates going up. We just want to stream you more. I'm pretty sure the co-hosts are going to get a raise.
Co-hosts is double the fee. We went from zero to
I actually to zero. I was like, I don't pay you guys to be on the show.
I got a dare for you really quick. I dare you to open that text Awesome McBroom just sent you and read it word for fucking word.
I'm going to pull up on you tonight after the event.
I guess that didn't pay off.
Did you piss him off recently? Because that could be bad.
No, I don't think to fight me. Probably for camaraderie.
Okay. Oh, you think so?
Okay.
Guys, here we go.
Shout out Austin.
Here we go. Our guest today is a Hollywood executive involved in the creation and production of more than 300 TV projects over the span of his career. He's also a business coach and author of The 3-Minute Rule, a pitching strategy that will help us, just like his CEO clients, say less to get more. Please welcome Brant Pinvidik.
Yes, sir.
That's like the best intro I've had in like the last 6 weeks.
Wow.
Right. Who's responsible for that?
Wow.
You're coming with me. That's all there is to it. Oh, man, I tell you.
Let's go.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. I like your energy, bro.
He already
dude,
has
I gotta
that.
Bring this.
He already has that vibe of like that motivational speaker. He's got the Tony Robbins.
Not only that, I got nothing to lose, so it don't matter.
Let's go.
Join the club, by the way.
I got a cord under your
phone. Oh, God. Lord almighty.
Okay, here we go.
We're back in business.
Pull it back together, guys.
Yo, yeah, you have a lot of energy, which is rare for a Hollywood executive business.
Yeah.
Like you're a personality.
I mean, listen, that's part of what I've been able to do in Hollywood is I was able to captivate a little bit of the sort of the magic of the personality.
Yeah.
And you can cover for a lot of bullshit that way.
Yeah.
And so it looks haphazard, like it just sort of happens, but it's sort of a cultivated act that I use really well in the Hollywood game.
Got you.
Yeah. Would you say you're like a hybrid business / talent in a way?
I mean, or do you not turned to that now. Yeah, it turned to that. Originally, it was just like, I was just begging to find something that I was good at. I spent most of my life up to about 30 years old just struggling. I was in Canada. And when I came to the US, things started to work. And like, you probably went through the same thing. Like when things are a struggle, it's a struggle. But when things start to work, like when you find success finally, it feels so bloody good.
Yeah,
that totally. it's just what you want and it drives you to do better, right? Mm. And so that was that sort of course of my life. But then at a certain point, it was like, okay, well, I did pretty well.
Business-wise.
What's next, right? In a TV thing. And the TV business just became unpleasant. In that sense, and so I just want to make a change. So,
what are some of the shows you've been a part of? So we could right off the bat explain for those who don't know.
So I did Bar Rescue, was a big show with John Taffer.
Huge.
Yeah, so that one I sort of created and put in the air. That was really big. And then my company, we did like the season of MasterChef. We put in the air. Biggest Loser was a big one.
Ooh,
so I did a bunch of those.
What was your involvement in in Biggest Loser?
You- like not a lot really, but I use the Biggest Loser title to put in, so it makes smart. Me seem better. Smart. Right?
Smart. No, I thought that's you really did you create the show?
No, not at all. No, I just happened to be at the company running the company that was producing it at the time. Amazing. So it's like I just walked into it and there it was.
And put it lead your portfolio. That's amazing. No, it's an amazing fucking.
Well, or like Extreme Makeover. Yeah. Like I'll say I did Extreme Makeover, but I did Extreme Makeover Weight Loss Edition. So whichever one you think is bigger, it was either the main one or that's the one I did.
Yes. Are you still in a way kind of faking it? Like at times, like to get not like completely, but to get to an even higher point.
Well, I think that's the course of everybody's life, right? Yeah. You are trying to get into the club that won't let you in. Facts. You want to be with the friends that don't want to hang out with you. Like it's just part of our nature. Mm-hmm. So, and I actually train a lot of CEOs and stuff on that idea because they don't feel like they're enough either. And I'm like, you're the CEO of a $4 billion company. But it's like, we're all one bad email away from losing our jobs. That's what it feels like, right? And people are going to come in and be like, hey, man, you shouldn't be here. Like, what are you talking about? You're a phone. Like, that's just the way we feel. The imposter syndrome is big with everybody. It's just sort of like you just get over it. But more so, it's more like, you know, people don't have the nuances of what we do in television. So I'm just tired of people like... they'd say like, what was your thing on The Biggest Loser or whatever. It's like, you can only explain that so many times before you're just like, yeah, it's one of my shows, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of my buddies, a record producer, and he did all of Celine Dion's songs.
Holy shit.
Except for one. The one from the Titanic, My Heart Will Go On.
No. Oh, that's like not investing in Uber. I just picked that one to skip. What was it? Was it Gary Vee that, no, he did Uber, right? He missed Uber, right?
And so he heard the song. He's like, no, that's not a good song. I don't want to do it. But the problem is whenever he would talk about it and he's the producer of Celine Dion, they would say My Heart Would Go On. And he just got to the point where he's like, you know what? I'm not even going to bother telling the story. I just go, yeah, that one too. Like he just,
oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
You're just like, oh my God,
he got sick of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yo, so you're a Hollywood chief. You're a Hollywood exec, a Hollywood G, I'll say. I'm a digital guy, bro.
Yeah.
You scare
the living crap out of us.
I was gonna say, are we cool?
Yes.
Is there some beef
dude,
here?
Dude, I'm so ridiculously impressed by you, and I have been for years.
Oh, thank you, man.
I told my publicist, like, I want on that show. Mm. I love those guys. Like, you are the enigma that scares the daylights out of the people in my position.
This is so interesting.
Here's the truth, right? I don't get to say this very often, but I'll lay this down for you. Is that I've been producing high level content for a very long time. And it's like, you know, a lot of the shows that I did, but you don't know about 150 that I put on the air because that's the way the TV business is. Yep. And the good news is I have a whole community around me. When I put a show on the air, there are so many people involved and part of it and making decisions and like Nielsen numbers and like, what are the ratings? Yep, and it's all just fluff. So when a show doesn't work, which most of them don't, it's like, I can blame anything. Mm. Like I can point to anything. It's not my fault, right? Like I did my job.
Yep. You're insulated.
And the idea of putting something out online that's got to go directly.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
To the viewers, and they give you immediate feedback, is so terrifying that it's like, we know in Hollywood we couldn't do it. Because if we could, we'd go take your money and be doing it. But we can't.
Absolutely.
Because there's no way I could create a viral video. There's no way I could create a YouTube channel. Like, I don't have that in me. And not only that, it terrifies me. Because it's like, I don't know what the audience wants, but I'm okay playing in the world of that because all of my friends who make millions of dollars and make TV shows, we've all decided we don't know what the audience wants. That's okay. We're just going to make 50 shows and maybe one will work.
Yeah, interesting.
And it's like, if you made
carpet bombing.
Yeah, if you made 50 YouTube videos and they all completely bombed and you only had
toast.
One that did relatively well, you wouldn't be doing this anymore.
No, yeah, facts.
And it's a big difference.
Yeah, you gotta hit that target every time.
Are you friends with, is traditional media friends with digital media now because they have no choice?
Yeah, it's It's still hard to make money. Like traditional television still makes real money. Facts. And like the cable business is still valid and vibing. The issue
people are always disagreeing with that. We talk about that on the show a lot, and everybody talks about cable cutting, but I remind them that the lion's share of advertising money still goes to traditional line in media.
Well, you know, and here's the thing, like, you know, Guy Fieri or Anthony Bourdain, God rest his soul, like they're never on shows that have ever had more than 1 million viewers average.
That
right?
is insane.
But crazy. They're household names.
Yeah.
And the reason is, I'll let you in on a little of the reason, it's called the barrier to entry. Television has what's called the barrier to entry, which means the public, our people, the culture, assumes that someone has granted you some sort of passage onto this television show, that you have climbed some ladder to get there and that you had to do something special. You put on a YouTube video, people sort of instinctively feel like, well, you just did that on your own. It's not special. And so you'll get millions and millions of views every single video you put out. But yet someone like Guy Fieri, who has 312,000 people watching once a week, 14 times a year.
He's a household name.
Yeah, and it's just a weird cultural thing, right?
They passed the bar where they became household names based on your inability to refuse them.
Oh my God.
They did so many views, but for to your point, for the most part, 99% of these online creators.
You guys have transcended that. There are not very many. Like you're like a movie star in that sense, right? Like that's just rare. And it's crazy because our culture has just been slow to adopt that, right? And so it's an interesting world. But from our perspective in the television world, you guys just scare the crap out of us. And here's the thing. Like, I know talent, right? Like, I spent my entire life chasing talent, assessing talent, figuring out which talent's real and which talent's not, what they say and what they do and their following. And it's like, when I see the level of work that you put in, when I see the level of professionalism that goes around this building, it's like, oh my God, like, this is a serious, serious operation.
Absolutely.
That takes an incredible amount of talent and skill combined with like an unbelievable sense of creativity to be able to talk directly to an audience
and
to
be able to
real time. Like it's real time. You guys follow along. Like, do people like it? Do people not like it? And be able to change that and continue to deliver week after week, day after day, year after year. It's just like, yeah, I couldn't even come close to doing that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, bro.
Like
when you sat down, you looked around, you were admiring the set, and you're like, "Yo, this is crazy. I know every bit of work that's gone into this." And because not a lot of people do.
No, and that's what I mean. Like it's just so innate to the process of building something creative. But for some reason, if it's on a YouTube channel or like with Amanda, you know, when I interviewed her for my podcast, it was like, she's an Instagram model. I get it. But do you know how much goddamn work it goes in to be that
so
popular?
So much.
And like, it's every detail, the attention to detail people just don't understand. Mm-hmm. It's shocking.
It's the biggest thing. I as someone who literally a day before you came here just jumped into the actual TV machine.
Yeah.
I just shot two pilots for MTV yesterday.
God. Oh God.
And seeing, dude, and crazy.
Is he going to change first off? No. Are we going to lose our friend?
He's become, he's going right back. He's going to be like, that's the last time I'm doing that. So
we're just waiting for him to come back with yellow hair, with dyed hair.
I think he's going to bleach his hair.
But so I show up and first of all, your car will be at the house at 12:30. You'll be in wardrobe for 30 minutes, hair and makeup. You'll walk on the set, you'll do your thing, and you walk off the set and you get back into a car.
Yeah.
Maybe you're in your green room eating snacks, they're touching you up and stuff. All of the other work that goes into the project is on the network.
Yeah.
Is on the people that work on the show. When we make our that's incredibly distracting and just quite rude to the guests, to be honest with you. Put it down right now, I'll slap you.
Can I just say it's excellent?
No, I'm just kidding.
It's excellent head of lettuce.
Let me finish this. All right, fuck it. Pass it over. Give me a fucking bite. But before I bite this, to your point, I mean, there's so much work that people don't see that goes into every piece of his content. That, by the way, he is, or even mine, the night shift that we are integral in the editing process, the concepting, the writing, all of that's us. On TV, I show up, blow up, walk out.
Yeah,
that's it.
And there's part of that that you don't realize, which is working against you guys a little bit, is that there's an ecosystem, right? Or an ecosystem, you say in the United States. The ecosystem of television employs hundreds of thousands of people, right? From Madison Avenue right down to the grips. And all those people are invested in the process of television being successful and driving revenue. And the revenue comes from basically spots and dots, we call it, where it's like, I'm going to sell ad revenue for a 30-second commercial that no one's going to see, that people can DVR through, that no one cares about, right? Whereas, like, effectively, Logan, when you do well and you're, you know, like, you make the money, right? When your YouTube channel blows up, it comes to you.
There's for the only, most part.
But you know what I mean? Like, there's eight people or 15 people, or like, there's just not the same sort of surrounding of the planets to like bolster that up. Whereas TV is a whole bunch of people being like, hold on to the rails, we're going down, let's keep it up, boys.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, they do not want Madison Avenue ad guys giving you guys more money, because it's like, well, what if they figure out that these people actually pay attention to his reads? Like, they might actually go buy those damn sunglasses. It's, whereas if you do that ad on an episode on WeTV, there's not a single soul that watches that ad. And we know that.
It's funny you say that, because coming from the brand side, and this should actually make you feel a little bit more comfortable when you go home tonight, the television continues, and television commercials continue to move the needle in a very, very major way for brands.
Yeah.
We had spent, the brand I worked on last was this, a company called Lovesac. And you know, we went from a $35 million brand to a $250 million annual brand. And we did digital media. We worked with social influencers, everybody. And the thing that truly, truly, truly moved the needle was television advertising. Once we got into the homes of people watching linear television, we started to see a massive uptick in business, a trajectory that was vertical.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's, you're right. Cause, but maybe subconscious, like, I don't know exactly what it is, or we had a really good commercial, which it scored really well on the net promoter score, was off the charts.
Yeah.
But it's give and take. I mean, there are a lot of brands that are still making all their money off television advertising.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's just focused in that world, right? And people are slower to adopt things than we all think. Like, we were having this conversation about television sort of dying off 5 years ago. We were talking about it 10 years ago. Yep. It's like, we're not that close to it. It's still a ways out.
You know? Do you think cable and TV dies at some point? Or
And listen, I think what really happens is at some point the cable and TV guy goes, okay, thanks for making all these other digital things. You've tested them out. You've made your mistakes. You've ruined it. You've done this. This is working. We'll buy you. This is working. We'll buy you. We'll sell you. And now we're a cable TV network, and now we're this network. And they'll just move. They have unlimited resources and the smartest people in the world.
So like Viacom buys you, buys, who owns YouTube?
Apple does.
Apple owns YouTube.
Or
right. Google. Sorry. Right.
Google, Apple.
So Viacom comes in and buys it from Google, assuming that
The other way around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just like, it's just going to move. Like those guys swing huge dicks. And
they'll just
big old schlongs. They're not worried. You know what I mean? They are win by acquisition and bulldozer. They're just, so they'll win.
Speaking of which, did you see that new IPO that's about to launch in Saudi? I think it's in Saudi. It's going to be twice the size of the Apple valuation. Apple's currently the only $1 trillion, I believe the only $1 trillion plus company. I think that, or maybe them and Amazon,
I think Amazon
at right around
well.
$1 trillion dollars. There's an IPO that's about to happen in the Middle East. I can't remember where it was. I think it's Saudi Aramco. It's a $1.9 trillion initial public offering.
Want to know something crazy? I actually worked for Saudi Aramco in college.
That's a lie.
I'm dead serious.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm dead
If you
serious.
Had stayed with
get
them,
stock options
you would be...
No, I did video work for them.
You should have got options. You're Spencer Taylor.
You work for Saudi Aramco?
I did,
The
bro.
World has its first $2 trillion company. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, they came.
By the way, I like to read.
It's
the
a Saudi Arabian oil company. Oh my, this is crazy.
I did like video, like boring corporate videos for like their internal team.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, let's see how their IPO goes, because my company's worth a $2 trillion too by my valuation.
Nice.
We'll
nice.
Just see
nice.
How that works.
Nice.
How did you get started in Hollywood? Because you moved from Canada.
Yeah.
And what about you makes you stand out?
I mean, you know, here's the thing. I used to run failed businesses, basically. I'd come up with a big idea. I'd go, like, try to figure it out. And in Canada, it's not really an entrepreneurial vibe like it is here. So,
fixer-uppers.
Yeah, and I was so, like, always my back up against the wall. And there was times when I would go into a meeting to try to raise money from somebody. And if I didn't get a check from them in that meeting, I wouldn't be able to eat, right?
Yep.
And so it teaches you not how to sell. Right? Like, that's not what I learned. I didn't learn how to sell stuff. I learned how to get what I wanted without somebody feeling that I was desperate. I learned how to get what I want and made them feel like I didn't need it that badly.
Mm.
Because if I needed $5,000 from you really badly, it's very unlikely you want to give it to me. The second you feel that from someone, that they'll say anything to get what they want, you go like, okay, I don't want to be around this guy. And so I learned a really good technique of like making people feel that I wasn't desperate. And so when I brought that down to sort of the Hollywood pitch vibe, it was a real contrast to the, hey, hey, let's do lunch. Let's, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was just like, listen, here's the way the show works. Here's why you should like it. Here's why it's good for CBS. And here's how
providing we're value, providing value.
Yeah. And 100%. It just made it, it impacted people. And it, I grew this reputation of being the best pitcher in Hollywood. And I was like, I'm not working very hard. Like I'm not doing very much. And I remember specifically, I was in CBS lobby and I was about to go into the pitch room and out walked Simon Cowell. And I was like, oh my God, I got to go into the room after Simon Cowell. This sucks. So he and I are yapping and he looks over my shoulder and I turn around and there's Mark Burnett walks in.
Mother
and
he's, shit.
And he's coming in after me. Yay. So I'm wedged into these two bohemian monsters.
The second
like,
one bigger for sure.
And I'm like, what the hell am I going to say in this room to impress these people? Like, how am I going to come across as like fancy, awesome, amazing producer that should be there and like on that level? And I just got this wave of panic realizing like, I can't. Like, nothing I do is going to impress them. So I got to get in the, and out of this room as fast as possible. So I just sat down. Everybody said, hi. I was like, oh, great. So here's the way the show works. And here's why we think it's great for CBS. And here's how we're going to produce it. And here's how you can get it. And here's the IP. And that was it. And I was out of that room in like 9 minutes.
Wow.
They bought the show. And I was like, my agent was like, that was amazing. And I was like, wow. Okay. And so I just started sort of doing that system.
So it kind of happened on accident. You just like stumbled on it.
Yeah. And I started to develop that ability to get in. And then what happens is that the network buyers would be like, oh, Brandt's on my schedule to do a pitch day. Oh yeah. Okay, good. Cause at least I'll know it'll be good. Right.
And
yeah.
fast. We talked yeah. about this earlier.
Yeah.
This brevity. And I told you I had a phone call this morning with the ex CEO of Apple for this app that I just launched, this dating app called Skip It. If you're
God
in Southern California. You can cut it. I don't care.
With
all the core investors in the business, one of them being John Sculley, and the kids are 19, 20 years old that launched the thing. And the thing I keep telling them is these guys don't care about all the intricate fucking details of the app.
Yeah.
Give them the top line info that they need to make decisions and then let them go back to golfing, fishing, whatever the fuck they're doing. Because they're right. $100,000, you know, infusion into our business. They don't care about these are, right. as you know, the people you pitch are behemoth monsters.
Yeah. So, and they get to the point that's really all
facts,
that counts.
Facts.
That really helped my process through. And then I did, like, I worked really hard at relationships in Hollywood. Like, I had a spreadsheet of every single person I ever met, where they worked, when their contract was, when they were coming out of their contract, when was the last time I talked to them. And I kept that up every time. And so I would know if your contract was coming up in 3 months, I would make sure I put a call into you being like, hey, what are you doing? Is your contract coming up? And they'd be like, yeah, it's like, great. Cause I'm hearing good things about you out in the community. You know, you need some help or anything comes on, let me know. I'll connect you. And then what that did is like put me at their peer
top
group, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, cause I'm talking about the jobs that you might be interested in, just sort of, and I kept that, but like, it's like anything. Like, did you just like waltz into YouTube stuff or did you like, you studied every video that went on, what worked, what didn't, what time, when do I put it out there? How many people do I put in this? How do, like, those things are the only way you can be successful, right? And then when it's all cut together and it's all up there and you know, you're in the news making all this money and people are like, oh my God, I should be a YouTube star.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, and I had this time when I was surfing out with one of the partners in the company and a guy surfed out and it was a doctor and he goes, oh, hey, this is Dr. Bob. I was like, oh, Dr. Bob, yeah, I heard about you. Okay, good. Yeah, this is Brad, runs the company. Oh, Brad, hey man, I was thinking I want to come see you. I got these ideas for these reality shows I want to talk to you about. I was like, great, I have these ideas for these medical procedures I've been thinking about. I want to come talk to you.
Nice.
And the guy was like, what? And I was like, oh yeah, Dr. Bob, what I do for a living is a real job too, you know? And he was just like, what? I was like, yeah, like it's
always so awkward when people pitch you, like pitch from way outside the vertical.
Yeah.
Like, you know who's the most guilty for this in my entire life? Mom, if you're watching this right now.
Oh, no.
Mom, if you're watching this right now, please.
Oh, my God.
Awesome. And Pam, you do this with Pam sometimes too, right?
No, my parents have never, ever suggested a video idea.
You said that.
Ever.
You said that, right?
Yeah.
But, Mom, we work really hard. We do a lot of in-depth studies on this stuff. I think we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you and I love you very much.
But then again, we might not. Like, Robin, you can text me your ideas.
That is a good point.
I'm not sure I know any of this.
He's much
shit.
More open to and I'm starting to get into his system a little bit. He will actually take at least like feedback from anyone. And he's able to keep a filter up, but he will technically get pitched by anyone.
Yeah.
He'll take a pitch on a new content idea from the guy that parks his car.
And have you done a lot of those ones from random people?
No. I want to say no, but the ones that I do are fucking good ideas. You know, like
it's just a different system.
I people ask me all the time, and it's like I just don't take outside pitches from people anymore because it's like of the whatever hundreds of shows I've sold, not one of them has come from somebody outside the business. Other than hey, you should meet my boss. Like he's running this particular company. It's
that's
like, oh,
really interesting.
No, I told him. I told him a couple weeks ago. I said my biggest hope for you in 2020 and moving forward is that you start to rely on your generals.
Yeah,
that was my biggest thing, and because he's been good about it, and he's had people that will filter those people out. But for the most part, he'll take a sit down with just about anybody.
You know, can I pitch you a show?
Of course you can.
All right, here's what it actually.
Yeah, do it. Let's do it.
All right.
But you're ready for the real feedback, or do you want me to make you seem like it's a good idea?
No. I want real feedback because this is an idea. I think Mac and I were like hungover one morning.
I'm gonna tell you my answer right now before we get on there. Okay. Go ahead.
I heard that.
You got to whisper so.
No,
quiet.
It's not. I don't think so. All right, ready?
Go ahead.
Okay, so it's like you know American Ninja Warrior.
I know it very well.
Okay, so it's like. Four doors in the middle of an arena.
Okay.
And they all lead to a boxing ring in the middle.
Okay.
But to get there is an obstacle course.
Right.
In the American Ninja Warrior-esque style.
Okay.
So you say go, and the contestants do the obstacle course, and the first two
that get into the ring
beat the shit out of each other, and the winner is like the Ultimate Gladiator or some shit. And we'll call it the Ultimate Gladiator.
He's like, this reminds me of a show called Red Ring from 1986.
You know what? It's actually not a bad idea at all, to be honest.
Let's go.
And it's kind of, because here's the element that makes sense on that, right? Is because now you got to decide how fast and how much effort you want to put into the obstacle course to get there, because that's how tired you'll be when you get to the ring, right? So it's like, if you made the obstacle course a little bit more like, you know, the way stage two used to be on America's Ninja Warrior, we have to lift the things up. So it's like there's some energy expended as opposed to just like jumping around a little bit.
That's
so that
great.
By the time you got the end, you're sort of like worn out. Now you could get really fast, but that takes a lot of energy out of you.
Wow.
So there is something to the idea of whoever gets to the ring first wins. That's actually the core of a very good idea. Now, here's the deal. Here's what's great is I don't do TV on a day-to-day anymore, so I don't have to deal with this. Great. So here's what I'm going to do for you.
I don't want to do it.
I've seen this a million times. I'm going to connect you with my assistant. They'll get back to you.
No. You guys are so mean to him. No. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to connect you with Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith is one of the greatest producers that's ever been in the business, and he is the creator and producer of American Ninja Warrior.
Oh, there we go. That's a cool
connect. And you guys together, with you as an EP, that is a real show that he would take very, very seriously.
I just wonder if I really want to do it versus just brainstorming dumb ideas with my friends.
By the way, brainstorming it and just talking it out is great. Because, by the way, from the time we mentioned this to the time you get that on the air is 2 years. From the time what we just talked about to the time it gets on the air, those shows are unrecognizable. And you made more money in the last 15 minutes than you would on that show.
Yeah, I know.
I'm curious. So hard. What's the shittiest idea you've ever had?
American Idol. For bands, people pitched me all the time, every single day. That was one of that I got all the time.
Why is it a bad idea?
It seems horrible.
Because it just like, it's not the same. You can't, it's a long story I could go into, but it's like the American Idol, way it really works is it's one person,
create
one
celebrity.
Character. Yeah, and you create that and you get attached to them. A band is like, people don't have the same attachment to it. You can get attached to a lead singer, but the band doesn't have the same
fucking
thing.
Drummer.
And plus, it wasn't even that's a bad idea. It's that, well, I'm sorry, do you run a record label? No. Are you the owner of a, you know, fancy a performance club where bands play all the time? Or like, why are you pitching me American Idol Red? Like, what do you have that's valuable? Or people pitch me some sort of NFL thing. Happened a few months ago. A guy wanted to do the NFL combine, but for like regular people. And like, you do the quarterback thing. I was like, great. Do you play in the NFL? No. Do you own a team? No. Is your best friend a quarterback? No. Like, well, what the hell is your connection to the NFL? None. Oh, I get it. So you have a good idea. You think you have a good idea. You want me to use all my connections, go do all the work, then go sell it, take all the risk, put up the insurance, and then send you a check?
Were you always like that? I'm actually fairly surprised. like, do people have to have a credential or a network? Yeah.
It's not even a credential as much as it has to be value. Like, an idea is not really worth much, right? Ideas.
Do you think ideas are worthless?
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Almost worthless. Especially in reality.
That's crazy. Yeah. I've heard this before. I'm not... I wrestle with this one. I don't know if I agree.
Because execution is almost impossible.
I know.
An idea is a little bit closer to value for you, right? If I give you a great idea for a skit, you know what I mean? You take my book, 3-Minute Rule. And see how I bought that
nice.
In there?
Yeah, I want to talk about that too.
But you take my book and you equate it to some sort of sex thing with your girlfriend and you can't get past 3 minutes and I snide into the covers while you're in there and I read you chapters and you get past 3 minutes, right? It's a good idea for a skit.
Book.
Yeah. That's the skit, right?
Yes.
I feel like ideas are super valuable. It might not be of value to the person who has the idea. It's of value to the person who takes action on the idea.
Here's the thing. You could make that skit tomorrow, right? And you're the one who controls the distribution, so you could get it on the air. So the difference between my idea and the execution is short. So it actually has some value. If you liked it, it's got some value. Mm. If you have a pitch an idea for a TV show, to get on MTV or get on Spike TV or any of the cable networks, the space that you have to go from idea to actually getting on the air is so damn far. There are so many hurdles to cross. Yeah. There are so many people, so much money, so much time, so much energy, so much development that it's just not going to happen. And that's why when someone sends me something that they've WGA registered or whatever, it's like, oh, amateur. Because they know, like, they don't know anything about the business.
That's
like,
so funny.
No one's stealing your idea in reality TV. It's like, I say all the time, yeah, it's a good idea. If you can go make it, knock your socks off. Like,
I get,
good luck with that.
I get fans all the time. Or just like random people that want to pitch me multiple ideas that they have at the same time.
Yeah.
This is the next big one. And so is this one. And I always say the same thing. I say, if you bring me an idea, bring me a go forward strategy with it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm not interested.
That's right.
So I need to know what's going to work and how it's going to work. Those two things combined, then you have something.
Yeah.
I have an idea for a new TV show, and this is how we're going to get it to the network to buy it.
In this place, or it's like, here's what I have that's valuable, right? Like, yeah. I wrote something, I run a podcast, I have a blog, like I'm connected to the restaurant that we're going to go film at, or like I'm in the military, like something that says you're going to contribute and that only you can bring that. The idea to do a Mr. Mom with dads at home is like, yeah, that's not an idea. That's a concept that someone has to pour their heart and soul and 20 years of experience and get 57 people to sign off on. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not really going to involve you.
I'm wrestling with this with Logan a little bit, which is rare. We a lot of times kind of bash on things, but it seems weird that an idea, because like a good idea, to be honest with you, the most capitalizable thing or monetizable thing is a good idea from a dumb person. Like, if you could find a really good idea from someone who can't enact it, but you can, that's actually a big come up if you think about it.
But that's what I was getting at.
You know what I'm saying?
If you can put it to work.
Yeah, because the dumb person has no value in that idea.
Or ability to execute.
But here's the thing. If Logan takes your idea and does something with it, the guy's in years and years, he's the number one podcast in the world.
Let's go.
They've won factually. The streaming, factually speaking, of course. Like, that's the value is already there. You already have done 98% of the work. So sure, my idea might be worth 2%, but most people will think their idea is the 90%.
I think this is a good note because on your last video, I think both of us were getting a ton of DMs from people who want to be a part of the new Maverick Squad, for example.
Yeah.
And I think there's something like everybody thinks they have talent, but it's like, what can you actually show? How can you show up? How does that talent contribute to the team?
So you can imagine I'm also getting these emails and DMs.
So many.
And so many of them have no resume or case studies.
No, fuck that. Send me a video.
Or can't even format an email. You know, it's just like, hey, it's just like a block of text.
I'm 20 years old. I'm in college. I want to be a star.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking about taking acting classes. I'm like, yo.
I know I can do it.
And by the way, you might be able to, but at this point in my life, yo, I need like seasoned people who, important thing to me is, and probably this is parallel to what you're saying, like if we are going to bring anyone on this team who's talent, they need to have been doing the thing that they're going to continue doing to show that they actually like it and they can do it and stick with it.
Well, like The Biggest Loser is a great example. We used to get 250,000 applications a year.
Oh my God.
And every time when someone would say, if I could just get on the ranch, I know I'd be able to lose the weight, right? Because they're thinking like, oh, I'll put it in when I get there. And we're like, nope.
Gone.
Because if you feel that you need to get to the ranch and lose the weight, you probably won't lose the weight.
So you took people that were already on a journey?
No, there's like, I'm doing this no matter what. I am making this decision. Dope. It's going to happen. Yeah. Like, whether or not I get picked for the show, I'm going to lose weight. Those people lose the weight. Now, also, like, you know, the producers of the show at the point when the day-to-day guys could literally look at someone's bio and they would know if they were going to lose the weight instantly.
They just got like, that
they just
good.
Knew what? Right away. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like, it's a formula. It's a science. And that was... because there was certain telltale emotional signs that you could see, like that person will get skinny, that person will never be skinny ever.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was like that was a tough show to produce from that.
I was gonna say, do you feel like you exist in a cutthroat world?
Oh, you have no idea. I mean, the things I have made people say that they didn't actually say that I put on the air like keeps me up at night.
Because reality TV, like editing and making storylines and shit.
Yeah, of course.
I wanted to ask you about reality TV.
It's the only thing we do. There is no version of like, we just let you do it. We take whatever we need you to say and we will chop it up so you say it that way.
And you signed the line that said it was okay.
Of course it's okay.
That now, is terrifying.
Now, most of the times I can get you to say it for real because I know how to ask questions. Yep. Or what's even better is I have the producers that are 10 times better at than I am. And those producers come from like old school talk show days where they're on Sally, Jesse, Raphael.
We need you to hit this
and they can make you do things you never thought you wanted to do. And I can get you to say anything if I ask the right question.
You know what's crazy? So it's like you're like a puppeteer and you're shaping a world and literally creating the world and you're making your talent.
Yes, and what's great is
say
I do that.
Say and do whatever
I do that
you want.
There, and then it's like, oh, I didn't quite get him to say it the way I wanted. That's okay. In post, we'll just
facts.
And then I just move this word from here and move this. And there are times when we're on set and I'll get it in your ear saying, we need the word scandal. And so it's just like, you'll just go through and be like, what's that word? And you just get you to say the word wild.
Shut the fuck up.
Put it in. We'll do it where our field producers are watching yesterday's episode or the stuff we shot yesterday. We'll see a scene that's really good, but they say something cheating this and it was with Dave and not Joe. It's like, oh, if she had just said she was with Dave. Okay. Then we'll go into the next day and get the same girl in the chair and be like, she was with Dave or Joe? No, she wasn't with Dave. Or she was with Dave. Until she says, no, she was, you think she was with Dave. Oh, could you just say that? Yeah, you think she was with Dave. Bing!
And she has no idea that it's coming from that context.
And she never said that ever. And then it just goes, and then you edit it saying she was with Dave. And it's like, she may never have met Dave or known Dave. It doesn't matter.
You know why this is fascinating to me? I think about this all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's definitely like an evil mastermind that's making all these things happen. And should someone look bad...
it's not really anyone in particular's fault.
There is no bad.
When we, as YouTubers and creators, do that to the people around us, you're exposed.
Well, and they call you out right away.
You're a sociopath.
Which is crazy.
Your ex-employees make a Why I Left Team Maverick videos.
The biggest thing that I witnessed when I jumped into this social space was one of the most important things to the TV process, which is... people watching review teams.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now that outside of this camp, 99.9% of the YouTube community makes a video, cuts a video, puts the video out. There is absolutely 0% review. How would this affect this sensitive group? How would this affect this protected group? The first thing I did when I joined this camp was enact a review team.
Did you do that?
Just after Tokyo.
Now, by the way, I was one of the first ones on my podcast, which nobody's ever heard of course.
Which is great.
Which is good, but I was on your team the second that happened.
Yeah.
And I said that exact thing. It's like, what are you talking about? Like,
The guy's out there making videos every goddamn day. Like, this is never crossing anybody's mind. And this in the real world is a zero on the scale. It was just like, it was so overblown. And like, and I said, like, it's not a big deal. It feels like a big deal at the moment because that's the way the moment feels. And I've been there. Everybody's been there. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, it was a non-issue. It was a non-issue.
The polarizing sentiment for that video fascinates me.
Yeah.
I think it says
more about, and we tread carefully when we talk about.
And you should. You might as well.
Right.
Right.
But I think it says more. You're able to get a good idea of the person based on their sentiment about that event.
True.
Do you know what I'm saying? True. Like, it's just. Yeah. It's just.
Who told me they'll use that as a gauge to? Was that you? Someone told me that they'll.
Use the person's feelings about
Tokyo as a gauge of like what kind of person they are.
It probably wasn't me, but I completely get that.
It tells you a lot. Even take away that event, put anything about somebody else's life. Like if I see somebody complaining about somebody else's life, that tells me a lot about where that person's at.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, it's easy to see. Yeah. So
What is the 3-minute rule?
So the 3-minute rule is a book I wrote called that it basically says everything about your business, product, or service has to be conveyed clearly, concisely, and accurately in 3 minutes or less. In those first 3 minutes, you have to capture and maintain your audience's attention. You got to illustrate value and you got to create engagement. And if you don't do that, you're losing your audience. The world is hypersensitive right now and no one's going to let you sell them anything. Yeah. And they just want information. We have an attention span now that is shorter than a goldfish, 8.2 seconds. And it's not because we're dumbed down or that we're like mindless zombies. It's because we focus more intensely and more efficiently than ever.
Yep.
And if I get your precious attention and I don't give you the information you want right away, bang, you're gone. You're off. Dumbass goldfish will stay around for 9 seconds. That's fine. But like a person is like, I'm paying attention to you. You better have something that I want. And so all the like neuro-linguistic programming or closing techniques that the sales guys have taught you, like it's all crap and none of it works anymore. It's more like, can you get to the point? Can you tell me what it is? How it works? Are you sure about that? Okay, how do we work together? Mm-hmm. Like those 4 steps that I take through in the book are basically like how you pitch anything.
How is it different from because it's actually conversely double to what a general elevator pitch would be, isn't it? Isn't a general 90 seconds?
Here's the thing, but here's the issue, right?
I don't know.
Here's the problem.
Okay.
It's like, it's not just about getting your basic idea. Okay. It's about how do you create engagement, right? Like, how do you really pitch and present or influence somebody to do something?
So
how
like
do you
in like an investor meet, not in like an elevator with some random fucking person.
No, and think about it. Here's the way we taught you how to do an elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Well, Logan, tell you what, I have an investment that will make you 10 times your money by the end of the year. Mm. And you lean in and go, ooh, tell me more, right? Does that sound how you would do that if someone said that to you in an elevator?
You got to get there.
You'd be like, what the hell, right? Because today in the world, if you start with a grand conclusion, like a big promise, people are like,
you're fucking crazy.
That's right.
You're out of your fuck. Get away from me. Security.
And then, I'm trying to explain it to you while you're thinking this in your mind, this guy's an idiot. And that's like the disaster of what's called the state and prove method. And we've been taught that for the last 50 years by ad agencies and everybody. Like, give them something big to pay attention to and then prove it to them. Like, well, guess what? People don't buy into anything you say anymore. Mm-hmm. And what we teach and in the book and I do around the country is I teach the inform and lead method, which is like, I'm going to give you the information and lead you to the conclusion. And it's what a storyteller does, right? It's why James Cameron can put you in a seat for 3 hours to watch a movie about a goddamn boat that sinks. And you know it sinks, right? And you're not on your phone and you're not talking to people. You're watching the Titanic sink.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And it's because we inform you of the characters, we inform you of the story, and we lead you to that same conclusion. And you can do that in any picture presentation. You can use Hollywood storytelling to lead your audience so that they come to the same conclusion you want them to.
Did you just three-minute rule us on the book right
just
there?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Okay, I was going to ask you to, and then I realized it was just done to me, and I'm sitting here, and I'm like, yo, how do I order this fucking thing?
That's awesome.
Yeah, and listen, it happened because I was not super happy with TV. TV was like, it's a tough business, right? Like, and you pitch, I've sold a ton of shows, but I've had a ton more, 10 times, 50 times more get passed on, right? And one time I was pitching my uncle at the Lux Hotel down here, and there's a whole bunch of people in a conference, and it was really tight quarters. And I said, like, this is the show that they passed on. And he was like, oh my God, that's the best show I've ever heard in my life. And I was like, yes, it was. And then my ego was getting all flooded because he was so excited. And then people were coming around. I had like 15 people around me, and I was pitching all these TV shows that the networks passed on. And they're like, you're the greatest. And I was like, thank God somebody feels like that. And the guy came up to me and he said, hey, can you teach my clients to do what you do? And I was like, I don't know what your clients do. And he's like, can you teach my clients to pitch people and not put them to sleep? I have like institutional investors listening to micro cap and small cap public companies, biotech engineers, and oil and gas companies. And it's terrible. I go down to Florida and I watch an oil and gas company present for 22 minutes. It's the worst thing I'd ever seen in my life.
What would you rather do?
Like, I would rather eat your arm, right? Like, it was just like, it was the worst thing I'd ever seen. And so he begged me to come to LA and work with his thing. I redid his presentation. I didn't think a lot of it. It was not that difficult for me because I just looked at it like a TV show. Well, how would I explain this? Bang, 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 bang. And he left me a voicemail like a couple weeks later, and he just said, and he was his voice was cracking, he's getting emotional. And he just said, listen, you changed my life. Like, I used to dread going on the road to go and sell this stuff. Now I'm so excited to talk to people. My wife thinks you put something in my drink. The stock is way up. Like,
wow.
I'll never forget what you did for me. And I was just like, what the hell, man? No network president had ever said anything like that to me before in my entire life. And as like a caveman, I'm one chromosome from a caveman. I'm like, Brent liked being important. Brent should do more of this. And so that's where I'm. So then I start working. And by the way, you make money for an investment bank, as Oren would tell you, like, oh my God, did they love you? Because they didn't have to pay me.
Yeah.
The client paid me.
Of course.
And they sold out the stock. They made the offering. So they're like, oh, we have another client. I was like, really? Let me go try that. And it was a biotech company.
You were in.
Yeah,
you were
type
in,
1
dude.
Diabetes anti-rejection therapy. And it's like some scientist guy's the CEO, and he's got a wing of the Miami hospital named after him, and he can't explain what he does to save his life.
I could fix that. Yeah. You were gonna say, you said, I could fix that for you.
I could fix it, man. And so once you do that a few times, he's like, oh, and then I got to go into like Oxygen and pitch another TV show.
Yeah.
And he's like, And so when the money stopped being a thing and it wasn't chasing the dollar anymore, it's like, well, now what am I going to do? You know, like,
well, because there's TV money and then there's pharma money.
Right.
And then there's investment.
And when you get
money
to the sort of like the top echelon of TV money, there's only one more step to go. And like,
right.
I was a long way from getting there again. Like, I had to build the company again. It's like, I just realized like the timing had changed. And it just like, once you get infected with the idea that you can help people and change things, and I would see the same frustration in their faces, like, and it didn't matter if it was a PTA president of my friends, my wife's, they believe in their value of what they have to offer, but they can't make other people understand it. And like, to be able to unlock that for someone is like, ooh, I like this. Yes, tell me how great I am again, you know? And then you get on stage in front of 2,000 people at a conference and they're standing ovation from your speech that you've given 19 times, and it's like you get better every time, and then they're like coming to sign books for you, and it's like, like, I think I'm going to do this more.
Yeah.
And so I sold the book and that went well. And
that's the first, that's the, your only book there now, right?
Oh yeah. Like, I quit TV and just like bang, sold the book, and then just like, I'm out of here, bitches.
And that was it. I'm in the book process right now.
Yeah.
I got a book. It's fucking insane. I got a book coming out March 1st.
I'll tell you the exact opposite spectrum. Tell you the worst, and I wouldn't tell a lot of people this, but the promotion is really rough because you got to ask favors from everybody.
That makes sense.
Is really hard to do.
Want to know who it's a little bit easier for?
Yeah.
People like us.
You know what?
Because
you'll see it's harder than you think, because the people that you can get on your list right now, you don't want. You want people you can't get to. And that's what happened to me. And it's just like, you're going to find people that you thought you could get to that don't give you the time of day. I got people who did a lot for me that I can't get on their show. And it's just like, oh man.
Oh,
like,
you mean going on shows?
Yeah,
I was just talking about digital promotion, and I have a bit of a cheat on because my book is about a really personal battle.
Yeah.
And so when you say no to promoting my book, you've just said no to me.
I get
as
it.
A human. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes. You're basically just saying, I don't care about your.
But here's what happens. Like, you want to get on the Today Show or you want to get on Kelly and Ryan.
That's
and
tricky.
It's just like, I want to get on The View.
Yo,
and like,
Mike on the Today
I think it's going to happen. I see it. I had a vision.
It's because of the topic. The topic is the opiate epidemic.
Yeah.
And so it's a huge, big fucking topic.
You might have caught that at the perfect time. Yes. Everything works, right?
It's like, weird as that is to say.
And I have a lot of friends in the TV business. And like, I worked with Whoopi Goldberg for years and did a lot of stuff. And I was like, I can't get on The View because they're doing political stuff
right now.
And so when you ask somebody that, and I have a couple other people that like I thought would say yes, and they're just like, no, man, sorry, I can't. And you're just like, it just tears your heart out.
But I just did all these favors for you.
You just feel like you're groveling for stuff again. And for me, I found that difficult to do, you know?
But you did it. Now
because
gone.
I'm like, I'm getting on Logan's show. I want that. I like that, dude. I got to get on that show. And I told my publicist, I was like, listen, get me on that show. I like that, dude. And I would have pulled other strings. I was going to have Amanda and Batch come all at you heavy if I had to.
What's your relationship with Batch?
So he did my podcast before. Okay. We worked together a lot. His movie stuff, because McGee's company and I are really close.
Got it.
He's been to my house a couple of times. We have lots of fun. We're cool. He's my cool guy. And same with Amanda. Take him out too. So I've been around that and I'd look to cast him and stuff too. But now, you know, he's a pretty big movie star coming up.
Yeah, he is.
So, goddamn.
Yeah, sure. That's a man with talent.
That dude is blowing up right on the edge.
I was going to say, You do like 10 things.
Yeah, too many.
Like, are you an author? Are you still involved in TV at all? Are you like a business coach?
Yeah. So I do TV a little bit.
Okay.
Because I don't run a company anymore. I don't do it as a full-time business. If I have a great idea or you have a great idea and I connect you to somebody, like I like that side. Okay. I'll direct a movie once a year kind of thing.
Really?
I like directing. So I'll do that. I had a couple movies do really well that I directed. That was fun in the documentary space.
Would I know any?
That's a loaded question.
We watched some docs.
I'll tell you the title, then you say yes, you heard it. Okay. It's like it was called "Why I'm Not on Facebook," and it was
amazing. Literally one of the best docs I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was good.
I love these guys. I love these guys. Professional.
Tell us what we can't be in showbiz. Exactly. Come on. And we'll say anything you want. Just put us on the TV.
And then I did a follow up called "Why I'm Not on Pokemon Go" that I did as a short.
Wait, what?
Yeah, dive in on this one.
So the why I'm not on Facebook, I hated Facebook, wasn't on social media. I was going to direct a documentary. I decided to do it on my hatred of Facebook. And my theory was Facebook is evil and it's all bad. And then as I got into it, I realized like, okay, well, if I hate it so much, the problem is either me or the problem is Facebook. And so I'd go in to prove that it's like, aha, Facebook can cost you your job. But it's like, the number one job recruiting site in the world is Facebook. Damn it. Facebook can cost you your relationship. Oh, my cousin got married because of Facebook. And then eventually you realize like, wait a second, this could be a me thing. And so I did this thing with Dr. Drew, and it turns out it was a me thing. Like,
we were actually more concerned with Pokemon Go.
So that was that movie. Did really, really, like really well as a doc. So then I did a follow up because why I'm not on Pokemon Go. I caught my daughter sneaking out of the house in the middle of the night, freaking out, and she's like going to hatch eggs on Pokemon Go.
Wait, hold on. She was hatching eggs.
Yeah.
She wasn't trying to catch any Pokemon in particular.
No, she had to go walking. Yeah, to hatch the egg. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was just like, okay, this is too weird, right? So I did the same format as the Facebook movies. Like, okay, so there's either I don't understand the idea, but people love it. So it may not be that it's dumb. It may be that I'm not thinking about it, right? Like maybe I'm the dumbass. So I spent time figuring out Pokemon Go. I did a bunch of funny clips and stuff. You guys might not think they're funny, but the regular people thought they were funny. And so it ended up finding out that, hey, you know what? If she likes Pokemon Go, I'm going to start liking Pokemon Go because it connected us. And if you have a 14-year-old daughter, a 13-year-old daughter at the time, like finding something to connect with your 13 was amazing. And so it was a huge thing. So I did it as a digital short, won a shit ton of awards.
Wow. And all that kind of stuff.
So that was fun. So I liked that process. And that's how I spun the podcast, right?
But you're not making a lot of money off of those films, are you?
Oh, no. No.
You just do them for fun?
I just do them for fun because I like it. And
passion projects.
Yeah. And listen, it's just part of the brand, right? And it's just sort of built. And like, then I did the podcast from that, which was each week I was going to take a new topic that I didn't quite understand that people loved. And then I got into it. And I did a bunch of the YouTube guys.
What's that called?
It's called Why I'm Not with Brant Penwidick.
Oh, okay. Nice.
But the problem is then like I was telling you earlier, like then I put Rob Lowe on as a celebrity. And it's like all of a sudden the views go way up on my podcast. Ooh. I like that.
Yeah.
And that's when I had Batch come out and do it. And like, next thing you know, it's like, why should I get Amanda on? Because she'll get lots of views. And it's just like, it turned into sort of like some hybrid celebrity chat show that's like basically you get that stuff anywhere. So it stopped being like super fun for me, but it hit a million downloads. Yeah, so I was like, cool. So it's just weird. It's a hard business, right?
We wrestle with that a little bit. We were just talking about it between providing value.
Yeah.
Like actual value and entertainment. So that's a balance in itself, but also a balance in that we know that if we have Austin McBroom on or like Tana or Summer Rae, these podcasts are going to get a shitload of views. But when we have
Brant Pinvidic, it's like
exactly no, or like Peter Krohn, like probably one of the most valuable episodes ever. Like you will leave it a better person until this episode, obviously.
That's
right.
Thank you.
But yeah, unfortunately, you know, not as many people care about the things that they should care about. Yeah.
But I think the right people do. You know, you do hit the valuable.
Well,
you know,
and I think we've obviously found the balance for it, you know, we found that, you know, every three episodes we do a value base and my personal favorite, I think I speak for everybody here on the set, though, our favorite episodes are actually the ones with no guest.
Right. Just
we
the boys.
Sit down, do just the thing. Boys. Yeah. And we go crazy.
And people probably love
them. They love them.
Well, and I do, now I'm doing this new podcast with this investment bank that hired me to do it. And I'm basically interviewing iconic business leaders from all different businesses that have had huge ideas that have revolutionized their industry.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it's like, okay, now that I'm interested in doing because I get to go talk to really cool people and talk about really cool stuff. And
what have you done so far?
So like probably my favorite was Kathy Ireland.
Ooh.
So it's like former supermodel.
What's going on?
$1 billion a year, like $2.5 billion a year company, top 10 licensing companies for the last 25 years.
Is her model still working?
Like,
yes. So she's crushing it. Direct response conversion engine?
No, what she does, she's a licensing machine.
Right, okay.
So she finds a product that could do pretty well. Yep. She puts the licensing around it and then goes quadruples their distribution and takes a fee on everything. The small organization doesn't have to manufacture stuff. I mean, she just crushes. Yeah, she's one of the most successful licensing. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's just, so she's big. And I did Christy Hefner. So Hugh Hefner's daughter, who ran Playboy as a public company for 25 years, the longest running female CEO in public company history.
She does social media.
And she was just like, she's just a badass female CEO. And you're just like, God damn, that was cool. And you might think the reason she got to be the president of Playboy is because she was Hugh Hefner's daughter. And then after you hear the interview, you realize like, whoa, she was the only person to hire for that gig because she's just that badass. So it's that kind of stuff I really like. So I'll do some more of that. So
And
the touring around and meeting with companies and speaking to companies and consulting and stuff like that. It's fun. It's pretty lucrative, but I'm just in the mode where I just want to have fun. And I was saying when I was touring your guys' compound here, it's like, oh my God, you're the single version of me. Like this is my life if I didn't get married and have kids at 21 years old.
Are you,
like
you wait what?
Yeah,
21.
You got married at 21.
21 years old.
Yeah. When you had kids at 21 as well.
I had kids at 26.
Are you still with the?
Yeah, 25 years.
Congrats.
Yeah, baby.
God. Congrats.
Yeah, baby. Yo, how are you still cool?
I mean, listen, I work really hard to make it feel like I'm cool, like. This is a lot of work to make you think I might be cool. Yeah, it'll all crumble at any moment.
You're doing a good job, dude.
But like, you know, like your compound here, the fun zone here that this is, like this is exactly what my house is, but just like a little bit of an older, nerdier sort of married dude.
Yeah, I'll get that.
It also depends on what wing of the house you're talking about. I mean, we got a kid in this room right now. It goes to sleep at 8:30 p.m.
Yeah.
I shit you not. The kid, 8:30 p.m. I won't call him out. It's the videographer. His name's Andre. And he goes to bed around 8:30 p.m. And if he's up at like 10, he is cranky.
But
he
is cranky. You know, listen, you do well. You get into a position. And now I run a travel and adventure club. Where
I just don't
understand. It's so great.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Well, by the way, and that's a batch. Well,
when does it end?
Like, are you launching rockets next?
Yeah, what's up?
Like, are you going to be in space?
Is your biggest motivator or driver of what you do in your life right now?
Yeah.
What makes you have fun?
Joy. That's the number one driver of my life.
Yeah, that's a great position to be in.
I got married at 21. I was an entrepreneur since I was 18. I struggled. I made it. I made it big. And now it's like all that I miss doing what you do like now with the fun and the girls and the people and the call, like all the stuff you do here as just you, like you're your own person. I never had that, right? Mm-hmm. I had kids. I had a wife. I was trying to pay a mortgage. I was trying to struggle and nobody believed in me. And it's like, then it worked. And so then I was just trying to get as much as possible and get my squirrel, grabbing as many nuts as he can. And, like, and then I finally got to the point where it's like, okay, like I'm not going to get private jet money. Like, but I have every other toy. And so it's like, well, what's next? Like, private jet money is way the hell up here.
Yeah.
And like, everything I have is the same now. Like, a bigger house is not going to have more rooms. Like,
yeah,
I got
yeah.
a theater. Like, what am I gonna, like, yeah. what am I doing?
Yeah.
That's and so a then great, it's like, you
that's
know what?
A great.
I only do what brings me joy. And that's what I found was I don't have this. I don't have a group of friends that I could just go grab my like jet ski and go jet skiing. Right. And so I just like, if I don't create this, I'm never going to do it. So I just started creating invites and inviting people to come do crazy stuff. And then it turned from 10 people that wanted to go to 50 to 500. Now it's, I have a club of 1200 people.
The Adventure Club?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Wait, wait, wait.
Yeah.
I want to do adventure.
Can and you? So you do. Well, you know, Batch came on my jet skiing to Catalina one, right?
What's, is there a website?
Really? Yeah. It's called rejectaverage.com.
Y'all, you pulled it off?
Y'all,
jet pull that shit up,
Catalina?
Yeah.
Just
jet ski Batch
what
is and it I called? Went.
What are you rejecting?
Reject Average.
Yeah. We should jet ski to Hawaii.
We went to Catalina and back.
Because it's average if
and
you don't.
And Batch came. Nolan Gould came. Like a lot of guys going that. That's me. That's it.
Travel and Adventure
Club. Oh, wow. You can do all that stuff, huh?
We do all that stuff, yeah. Yeah, and it's crazy. You want to hear the greatest Batch story ever on this?
Oh, it's a huge muskie.
Yeah. So we do all this kind of crazy
crap. What the fuck, bro?
Yeah. Why aren't we doing this shit?
Listen, man, you're hard to get to, buddy. You know what I mean? I had to write a goddamn book, become semi sort of micro famous to get on this damn show.
If you're watching this podcast and you or somebody you roll with wants to be on this show, you need to find a mysterious man by the name of Dylan. He's the only one that can make it happen for you.
He's the only one that can make access for you.
And I'm not giving you any of his info. You got to find it your fucking self.
I want to do this.
Yeah.
Yo, take us somewhere fun.
I got a lot of things. We've done really fun stuff. We did an exotic car rally up the coast of Monterey. We did 10 exotic cars and we swapped cars every hour, which is pretty fun. We just did 5 days Guadalupe diving with great white sharks.
Is that what this is?
Yeah, that was the great white shark thing. Yeah.
That's a big old big shark.
That was me filming that right there with my GoPro.
Wait, that's you?
That's me filming that.
That's amazing. You were filming. I thought that was actually you.
Into an aquatic creature.
Yeah. That's a great white shark.
Hey, you drink, do you party? Are you...
Dude, I'm kind of out of that mode. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to get up. And like, I owned a bar for years. Shark. So like, once you own a bar for years and you see drunken morons, it really like puts it in perspective.
When did
like,
you shut it down? What? Not the bar, but the partying.
I mean, I'm curious. Probably 10 years ago. Like when the kids get a little older and they can watch that and they can see you, like, I don't want to bring that
I want my kids to see me fucking hammered.
They're like, Dad, why are you eating my baby food? That's fucking weird.
So King Batch comes on this jet ski adventure, right? It's the first time I met him. And we jet ski all the way to Catalina Island. And part of the thing is you swim through this cave and then you go up on this rock, big rock, and you do a cliff dive, right? And if the tide's high, the cliff dive's probably 15 feet, a little bit scary. When the tide's low, it's like, could be 30 feet, really scary. And it was low that day. So he gets up to the edge of the thing, right? And he's kind of like, oh, I don't know. And he's like, oh, and he's like crawling, like he doesn't want to get to the edge. And I'm like, oh my God, because I'm like guiding everybody over, you know? And I was like, oh, dude, like, you don't have to do this. Like, it's just fine. Oh, and then like, and I'm thinking to myself, oh God, man. I'm like, can you even swing? Like, can you swim? Like, I mean, I don't want to be stereotyped, but like, if you're okay, right? Because you got to throw your life jacket in first. You can't die with a life jacket. So I'm like, oh my God, this is going to go so bad. He's nervous. And he walks right up to the edge and he's like, and he flips around, bang, and does a full backflip off the thing. Full backflip,
that's
a 30-foot backflip.
So he was just playing with you, bro. He was
tugging
the
chain.
Was
totally, yeah. And it was hilarious.
What a badass, bro.
And then
Batch
best,
is a badass.
You would have loved this. So there's about 15 of us. We get to Catalina Island, taking place where we're going to have lunch, and people see him and they lose their minds, right? Hey, Batch, oh my God, get it. And so I have a bunch of nerdy executives. That's what my club is full of, a lot of these guys that don't do anything normally and they come up for this kind of stuff. And they're like, what's going on here? I don't understand. Like, and he goes to me, he's like, are you famous or something?
Oh my God, that is my least favorite question ever. Oh, some girl asked me this at Hyde yesterday. She goes, she comes up to me, leaves me. She goes,
I saw this.
She goes, wait, who are you? I go, Logan. She goes, wait, are you famous or something?
Oh my God.
Oh, even with the eyebrows? She hits you with those eyebrows?
Bro, they judge me for their question. They go, wait, are you famous or something?
It looks
and
like
then I'm like,
oh my God, it's so great.
I don't fucking know. That's dancing.
Yeah. And he handled it so cool. He's like, just with the kids and stuff, no big deal. And I was like, dude, you have no idea. Like, but it's bugging my body. I was like, you look like a total fool. Like,
damn.
He's great.
Yeah,
going on your tour, though, and having that scenario happen is actually super valuable for the influencer because anytime you can make business leaders or investment firm leaders say, wow, that kid can make an emotion happen or make someone buy something, doing, the money starts, like, everybody wants to be Logan's friend. Yeah. Like, yo, how can we use this kid to
blow
up our next
business? And that happens quite a bit. Like, yeah. But what's great is, like, I get to pick, because it's not, I run it through my nonprofit, right? Right, so it's like, the Avengers don't cost very much. I get to pick who goes. So it's like, I take 12 people here or 5 people there, or we go up, you know,
that's awesome.
Snowmobiling. And it's like, I only do it because I just want to have fun. It was like, what would I have done if I was 24 years old and I had this kind of money? Like, this is the kind of shit I would have done every day. I would have just gone. So I do like 3 adventures a month.
Holy
and I'll just
shit.
Pick stuff and go, you know? And it's just like, but I produce
a month?
It. Yeah. I produce it like a TV show. Like,
yo,
I produce
how are you,
the
how
adventure.
Are you making money right now?
Currently. Yeah. Just, is it?
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah. He's like, I've been asking him the same question. No, I want to hear this answer.
Listen, there's a couple of pieces. One, I get paid real well to consult. Like when you, okay. your company wants me to come in, I charge a lot
of money. Dude, consulting money is so good, dude. If you ever find a way to dig a hole into the consulting world, it is mind-blowing how much money you can make off fucking consulting.
And I get paid quite a bit to come speak at a convention or whatever. Okay. I get paid. So that works out pretty well. And like, I don't want to seem like I'm trying to figure out how to say this without being a dick, but like, it's hard to get out of the way of money. If you have skill and you have ability and it's not part, like it's, you can't go very far without it whacking you in the face, right? Like, think about it. Like, once you started making money, it doesn't matter what happens, you're still making money.
It's a
you change what you do a little bit, you change this, and it's like, yeah, I made a ton of money when I was doing TV, and now I'm not even sure if I made it as much. I don't make as much as I did last year.
I do agree. I do agree. I think it's like I think it's formulaic. Like, it's a code you could crack for sure.
Well, it's just like the people who work hard and have skill and see opportunity and can deliver, like, you may not make the same amount of money that you did something else, but it's like, it's there. Right. And right now it's not a driver of what I do, because again, I'm never getting a private jet money in my mind. So I'm fine with that.
Yeah. You're selling yourself short.
Nothing I do now is going to affect my sort of the money I have. Like, it's, you know, I'm fine. It's just like, I'm more concerned with like, what is joy? Like, how do I get joy? Because I donated 20 years of my life to make money and sacrifice joy. So it's like, what are you thinking? I should put 5 more years in and then go have fun? 8 years more? Like, how many more years before I actually say, okay, now I've put in, now I'm going to take it out. Like, and I said this to my wife. I was like, listen, I'd rather spend all of our money over the next 25 years. And then when I'm 70 years old, like, have to find some job as a Walmart greeter. Like, I'd rather do that.
You'd be a great Walmart greeter.
Oh, hell yeah.
You'd be late. But I don't want to spend 5 more years grinding it out for money that I'm not even spending.
Yeah,
like,
that's
what is the point?
You may be wired though, like, innately, given what you do, in that you're so used to rejection and innovation in pitching shows.
Yeah.
Where, like, you have to come up with something that works.
Yeah.
Like, or you're, when you were in the TV business, or like, you fail.
Or you fail. Yeah. So, I've been kicked in the nuts so many times. So, I'm okay with it.
So when you don't, if something isn't making money, or you want to find a new way to make money, you're wired in a way that, like, you can just do that because you're used to going from A to B to C to D. Yeah.
And when I met and did the book, I was like, if I never make another penny, like, if I never make any more money, like, I'm okay. Like, if it never gets better than this, this is fine. I got real estate stuff. Like, I'm not going to go broke no matter what I do.
Yeah.
And you know that. And by the way, the thing I wanted to say,
you just figure it out. If it's always on your brain, it's all you think of, then it consumes time. And it's like, I decided to take a year and see if I could live like that. Like, I don't care what I spend. I'm just going to do my thing and not think about it. And it was the greatest year of my life.
Sure.
I wrote the book. I went on all these adventures, had fun. It's like, okay, I'll try one more year like that. And if I get to the point where it's like, ooh, I think I need to go make some money, like, it'll happen. It's fine. Mm-mm. It seems to be working well. I just want to have fun all the time. That's what I want to do as much as I can. And we'll see if I get tired of that. I'll figure something else out.
That's a good life.
That's the thing. Fun is fun.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and like,
there's no fucking question.
It's good.
And by the way, like, you're trading that, right? Like, right now in your world, like, you have access to, like, funds, you could do anything you want. You're super physically fit. You don't have any anchors. Not that my kids are anchors, but anchors and like a wife and a kids. Like, you could literally spend every single day trying to figure out how to cram more and more joy into your life. But you work, and you work your ass off, and you train for a fight, and you dedicate months of that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you are making trade-offs every day, and it's right in front of you. Like, I did a tour of your place. Like, this is a fun zone. And you spent how many hours today working, right? Like, a lot.
All of them.
So it's like, you're making this trade. I know
I was gonna ask you, it's work, but I really do enjoy what I do. So it doesn't feel like I work.
Can you imagine if it started to feel like you worked?
I attempt to stay away from anything that makes me feel like that. It's kind of my rule. If I feel like it, sometimes I will put in like the work.
Yes.
But like even boxing training, I thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah.
I really enjoy being regimented, even though it's, I'm putting my body through hell. It's fun for me. So do you feel like that with the things when you're consulting or work? Is it, does that bring joy to you, or is it literally only a travel adventure?
It does, because it's different every time. It's new companies. But I do find sometimes like I'll take a gig and it's like, I'm not winning anything here. I'm just helping these people say their crappy message a little bit better. And I've actually worked with companies where I'm working on their investor presentations and their thing for a public company. I'm like, shit, I'm going to go home and short your stock. Like I'm trying to help you tell a better story, but your story sucks. Your company's not good and your stock is going to go down over the next 6 months. So like, I'm going to go short it when I get home, but they're paying me to help them. So I don't do any of that anymore. Cause that's,
you're
like
not eating on both sides. No.
And again, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a dick, but like, it's hard. Like,
I like that preface.
The softest way to say it is a big, big deal for huge money is just as much work as a little tiny deal for a little bit of money. Mm. And when you start realizing it's like, oh my God, like reading a copy for an ad of a company that's going to pay you almost nothing or a huge mega sponsor, same read, same stuff, same work. It's just like, okay, well, what if I only did big company stuff? Yeah, what if I work with people that could bring me like big monster stuff? Like,
no to people's
that's
time. Right.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, so I got to learn to do that better because I just want to help people. And like when people email me and say like, can you help me with my pitch? My instinct is like, yes. Oh God, you're going to think I can be important to somebody again. Like that's the narcissist in me with mixed with this healthy, like this unhealthy sort of insecurity that I have, like causes me to like help people for free all the time because I want to be important and they can say nice things about me. So
I love that you're that self-aware.
It's a complex for sure.
You're like, I help people because it makes me feel fucking good.
Yeah.
Not because I want to help those motherfuckers.
That's pretty well the driver right there. That's what happens all the time. So it's kind of crazy.
Have you gotten good at and comfortable with saying no?
Nope. Well, hey, that wasn't bad. Wow, you just
nope.
No, I can't. I'm miserable at it. And that's why I don't like, that's why I don't run companies anymore, because I was bad with employees. If you worked right for me, like right beside me, then yeah, you are cool. But anybody else was like, it was a disaster because I can't displease people. Mm. Like, what if you don't like me? Like, it's a disaster. Mm. Like, so, and I just can't do things and saying no to people. And like, that just doesn't work for me. So I try to keep myself out of that situation as much as possible. And it ain't easy, but it's just, I'd rather do things that I probably should have done, like charged more, or I probably shouldn't have done and I still had fun, rather than go through the pain internally of saying no to somebody. But like, again, I'm at a point where I can afford to make mistakes and do that because it's not ruining my career anymore.
Yeah, I also have a problem with that.
It's rough, right?
Yeah, like, I that's why he's here.
Yeah. And having that third person that you can always deflect to is good. But
is
then
that, is that your guy or do,
oh, dude,
you, do
you nobody have says
that's
no
your
like
mic?
Aaron
Clark.
Amazing.
That's your mic. Nice. I like that guy. You fucking like me? Say it to my face. You fucking like me.
I have called Oren with a deal. Like somebody calls me and asks me to do something big, and I'm like, I'll get off the phone. I'm like, I have no idea how to price that. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do. I'll call Oren and he'll be like, you don't want to do that. Here's why you don't want to do that. You're not going to do that. That's ridiculous. That's so much work. And I was like, oh my God, he's right. And I was telling these people yes before I even thought about it. You know,
have you ever said to him, my ability to help you is dependent on your ability to listen to my advice?
I go, Brant, tell me who told you to say that. So seriously, give me their number. Call them, tell them never to talk to you again.
So what you're saying is he's me mixed with Dylan, basically, because that's what it seems like. He's me mixed with Dylan. Yeah, really excited no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. I love it.
You know, and it's important to have mentors in that space. Sure. Now, what's hard for you is like, who mentors you on this stuff? Like, honestly.
My friend.
That's what I mean. It's not easy, though,
it is
right?
One of my...
Yeah, it's tough.
It's one of my, I don't want to say regrets, but it's one of my deepest wishes in life. I wish, I love paving the way and being the trailblazer and literally drawing the blueprint, but also, there's no one here to mentor me. I'm figuring this shit out every day.
And that's tough.
A little more. It's tough because it's led to my downfall a lot of times just because I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm in the midst of growing up, and I've always had a tendency to mature a little slower than
my peers and also trying to take over an industry.
Yeah.
And you're doing so both hard at the same time. And by the way, it's, I'm not insulated by a team of producers who don't know, or when the audience,
or time,
doesn't know.
Yeah. You don't have time. Yeah. You put your shit out on there now and you get feedback right this moment. The decisions you make right now affect you.
I was going to ask,
which is so crazy.
But it's all I know. And by the way, I love it. Cause bro, my attention span, you said the average is 8 seconds. Mine's probably 2 to 3 seconds.
I know.
Like legit. So I'm obsessed with the instant gratification that is social media. I don't know if it's super healthy, but how do you have the patience for Hollywood? Because you talk fast. I'm sure you think fast. I'm sure. I bet you fucking walk fast, bro.
I do.
I bet you walk fast.
Yes, my boy.
I bet you fill up your gas tank fast.
Yeah. Faster than the average.
But so how do you have patience for Hollywood?
I don't. I had patience for Hollywood when it was my job and it was torture, because what happens is in Hollywood, anybody could get that job. You have to be nice to everybody. That's why the Let's Do Lunch happened, right? Is because you don't know when that person's getting this job or that job, or when they can do you a favor, when they can introduce you to somebody. And so you have to put up with stuff that you would never put up with happening in your real life. And that used to make me crazy because it's just not the way I was brought up. It's not the way I understood relationships or life. And it's just like, I had a network executive who ran a big, big, big network. And you'd go in and pitch him a show. And he would be all excited about it. Yo, I love that. It's such a great idea. Oh, it's amazing. And you'd leave there all excited. And then you'd tell your bosses or your friends or your agents, oh my God, this is good. We're going to have this happen at ABC.
Yep, yep.
And because I want to put him on blast without saying his name. So, ABC is going to do this, right? And then, you know, you'd wait to call and you'd call him and be like, hey, did you pitch it up? And he did it. And he wouldn't answer and he wouldn't call you back. And then the ghosted agent would call and you would be ghosted.
Yo, but he's a dude who may also have a problem saying no.
I get it.
Like some people.
I get it. But then what happens is.
You're kind of guilty of that.
Okay.
Dude. Like,
so then the agent's saying, hey man, we're just going to assume it's a pass because I can't get him on the phone.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, what the hell? And then you have another pitch on the books. And you got to go up there 6 weeks later and you walk into the room. Hey, oh, hey, how you doing, man? Good to see you again.
No.
Oh, what's going on? Oh, yeah. And you do the same damn routine again.
Of course.
And it's like, then you just pretend it doesn't happen. Or you see him at the real screen party. Oh, hey, what's up, man? And then someone asks, oh, yeah, we're buddies. And it's like, if this was real life and you ghosted me, we'd be done.
And do you not talk about it? Like, you just skip that it happened? Or
Of course you skip that it happened.
Because you need that relationship.
You need that relationship because... And what's crazy is in your messed up brain, you think that for some reason, if he kind of thinks you're still buddies, he's going to buy a show from you that he wouldn't have bought normally, which is such trash because I have friends who have been the presidents of networks and they didn't buy shows from me.
Right.
They can't buy shows that aren't good enough to make it.
Yeah.
There's 57 people that have to sign off. But for some reason, we feel like, oh, I got to kiss everybody's ass all the time, just in case that moment comes so my pucker is ready.
What if you've kissed all 57 asses?
It's what you do. That is, by the way, that's how the business
works. Because in this world, if you didn't kiss one of the asses, or by the way, you pissed one of the asses off, it'll get to 56 and your show's dead.
Right.
Because 57 said, fuck that guy.
Basically, it just creates the scale, right? Like, how good does your show have to be to get through the list and move? And so if everything's even, everybody's here. If you have great relationships and you know everybody, you lower the bar a little bit.
Yeah.
If you piss off certain people, the bar gets higher. And when you're a game of inches and you're talking about millions and millions of dollars, right? The Biggest Loser is a multi-billion dollar franchise, right? Bar Rescue's $500 million probably our company made on that. Like, that paid for my house. You know what I mean? Like, my car is a Bar Rescue car. Like, so you're talking about major, major life-changing moments based on one yes or no. And for me, when I started my own company, I had a big show at Sci-Fi and we were about to go into production. We've been working on it for a year, getting ready to go. Everything was good. We were so excited. Get a call from one of my executive friends who just said, hey man, show's dead. We're killing it. Finance came in. They don't want doing big competition shows. Killed it right there. One phone call. So I went in my company. That's a $6 million piece of business, that show. I went from being $2 million over projections for the year. So, you know, the studio's all excited. Everybody's dancing in the streets, right? To $4 million under in September. Okay.
Oh, the worst.
There's no making that up by the end of the year. It doesn't exist. So instead of being the hero, it's like you instantly feel like the goat. And when I was running my own company completely on my own, I realized like every single phone call was like that. Like if the buyer at Oxygen or at NBC said, yes, we want to develop it. Oh, I'm happy. If they said, no, we're passing, I'm like, oh, I'm sad. And then as you go through that, you're like, what am I doing this for?
It's exhausting.
Like, it's exhausting. Yeah, and I'm not even spending the money. Yeah. Like, I'm just putting it away. Like, for when? Like, years later, when I'm too decrepit to work, I'm going to need this extra. Yeah. Like, what am I doing?
When you're 322 years
old. Yeah, why am I going through this, right? And it was just like, I was like, forget it. I'm done with this. And so that was it. I just didn't want to give somebody else that kind of control over me. And it's probably like what you went through in your early days on YouTube. Like, one person would make a nasty comment on your video and it would like ruin your day. And it's like,
at first,
it's hard to deal with. Right. Yeah.
And it's like, you got to get over it.
You got to get over it.
Because to be honest with you, like, no, I always say people that comment negatively,
right,
they're commenting negatively about themselves. Well, it has nothing to do with the content. They're trying to get a rise. They're trying to make up for the fact that they have a little dick. Like, it's always some fucking thing.
Let's imagine that every negative comment you got cut your revenue in half. And if you got enough negative comments, you got no money from that video.
Suck
that'd
ass. Be a problem.
That'd be a problem. That's, by the way, that's TV. Every time you go out, you get a negative comment, no revenue. Get a negative comment, no revenue. Keep going till you get one. And then you get one in the air. You're so excited. Oh, you didn't get season two. Sorry, no more revenue. So, oh, you hired all these people to produce the show? Guess what? Go fire them all because we're not doing season two.
So digital technically democratized the world. I mean, at the end of that's the story at the end of the day. You know, it made it so there aren't these massive pitfalls unless you have a massive pitfall, that's of course. Right. But for the most part, they're little, you know, bleeps and you can get past things and you can move on.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What I'm just curious. Did you have a show that you thought was phenomenal, a great idea, and it did not get picked up? And maybe to this day you still think it had a place on TV?
I mean, I've had so many of those. It was crazy. Like, so many shows that I'm like, oh my God, that was the greatest show. Like, it happens all the time.
Can you say one of them, or is it protected IP or something?
No, I don't care about the protected IP anymore. I just got to pick one that I was like, that was one of my favorite shows of all time. So I did one with Michael Strahan called Power to the People, CBS, that should have gone on. And it was like, hey, humanity can do amazing things when we work together.
Yep.
Imagine if I gave you, Logan Paul, 1,000 people in your driveway to go command. What could you build? What could you do?
That's awesome.
Ooh. Yeah.
You can fix the education system with that many people.
Not on the air. Okay, here's another one. You ready? Remote chef. Okay, you can't cook to save your life. I'm going to make you cook the hardest 5-star meal you've ever tried in your entire life. But don't worry, because Bobby Flay is in your ear and he's got your eyes.
Oh,
and
he's
talking you through cooking this amazing thing.
That's right? Cool,
that
too.
I know.
That went on air with family, with the mother in the ear.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It went.
He's like, I know all about that shit.
Do you think some of this is shut down because of like other people's interests?
No, things just don't work out. Sometimes they work. Sometimes they don't. You know, like family business shows. I've had literally hundreds of them like that where you're like, oh my God, that was the greatest show ever.
There's so many factors. I mean, we talk about it here sitting on the podcast that like the network's just like, I don't really like that idea. That's never the case. The network's overspent on this show, so now they can't afford that one.
This is one I did with Mark Cuban. It's called The White Room. Guess what? Everybody learns things on YouTube now, right? That's how we learn things. I lock you in a box for 72 hours,
nice,
giving you one thing to learn. You got locked in this box and you spend all your time in this white room learning this thing. When you open the box, you're on stage. And you walk out live, and it's like, okay, can you juggle the chainsaw? Okay, you know.
Oh my God,
holy, that's cool shit. Too.
And
and we tried the chainsaw juggling act, and it didn't work out very
well. Couldn't get it sold.
Producer's head was cut off.
Great idea. I know. By the way, this is how it started. See, when I was at the Lux Hotel, I was doing this, and it was like, oh my God, that's a smart idea. See how much smarter I feel now? That's the business.
I could steal these from my YouTube channel.
You can have all of them. You can have all of them.
Yo, can you give us
about
a
restaurant
book
that you've never heard of before that is about to go under, decides to create their signature dish. You know, like there's the Pink's hot dog. What if we created the craziest idea in your restaurant? It's the slow cooked beef that takes 9 days to cook.
Like, just give it a shot before you close the doors.
Yeah. Like, here, we're going to build a 30-foot slow cooker and we're going to put the meat on one side. It takes 9 days and customers come in and they mark their meat 9 days ahead of time to get their reservation. Whoa. Right? So at these restaurants, you create their signature dish, right? And you create these cool over-the-top dishes that they sell, and that's what.
Did you ever come up with a second one, or was it just the 9-day brisket?
Well, we had like the world's biggest burger and stuff like that, where you have everybody comes with a measuring stick and let's like you decide where you want. Like, we come up with all these outrageous dishes where people were like, okay, great, it's the longest string of spaghetti. They make one string 26 longs and they make it into one.
Do you ever use any extracurriculars to get to those ideas? You know, do a little ayahuasca and go out in the middle of the fucking desert.
I mean, I know that has been a popular sort of talk about how we do these like executive retreats and stuff like that to try to come up with stuff, which is kind of pretty funny. But it's like,
no, like rituals or anything, like just like,
no,
some
it's
blood
a
form,
it's a formula. No, what worked on somebody else's channel? Let's do a version of that. Why don't we change this channel? How do we do this to this?
Yeah.
You know, I did one with McGee. Are you ready? You've seen Amazing Race?
Yeah.
A bunch of morons trying to happily make their way across these simple things with puzzles like, oh, how do I assemble this IKEA thing? What if we did Amazing Race for the smartest people in the world? Engineers, MIT people that come together and they have to build their way across. So I mean, every, you know what I mean?
They say every piece of art is
imitation. You know, we tried out for that, me and Jake, Amazing Race.
Really? And they didn't like, do it?
We did not do it. Because it was like an influencer season.
Oh, got it. Yeah,
and we were like, we don't really want to. By the way, we spent the 3 days at the facility filling out the papers, doing the 4-hour tests.
Yeah,
sleeping overnight, and we're like, we finally sat down with the execs, and we told them this beforehand. We told them that if there was going to be any other social media stars, we were not interested, and we just repeated ourselves in the meeting. And the one guy piped up. He's like, "So you're saying, if there's any other influencers, you're not going to do it?" And I looked at Jake. I was like,
"That's what we told you."
No, I thought we made that clear. He's like, "Well, then I don't think this is going to work." I was like, "Yo, you just wasted 3 days of my time. I hope your season sucks." And guess what? It fucking did.
Who was on it?
Well, the difference
you know
is
who was on it? Cole LeBrant, the Jesus loving firefighter.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, because that casting you in that moment made you bigger than the show, right? And then so that show would benefit from you more than you would have benefited from the show.
Oh yeah, bro.
And if they would have done it, you just cast it in a normal sense, like in a normal season, then it would have benefited you more than the show would have benefited, right? Because you would have got the would have got the upswing from being on the Amazing Race as a normal contestant. Yeah. So they positioned it wrong.
I can't believe the amount of preparation and research that goes into finding the contestants and your talent and
spend $2 million an episode. You can afford to do that kind of stuff.
That is insane.
It happens. That's what we do. You know,
wedding was the greatest example of traditional versus digital.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! Jake's wedding was crazy because MTV 30-40 people. MTV was like scattered around this house, like trying to keep up with Jake, Tana, the manager. It was nuts.
By the way, it was a disaster. That's TV and movie, like scripted TV's up here, and then movies are another layer of ridiculousness of how many people. Mm. I remember when Nathan For You came to film with me.
Oh my god,
and and so I was on the show and we did a whole thing, and he said something to me like, "Yeah, well, I'm a reality show too." And I laughed. I was like, "You got 46 people in my conference room, like you are not a reality show, dude."
Yeah.
Like, whatever, man.
Yeah.
So it was pretty. It's been crazy.
I'm hungover.
You'll love his first notes that he got from the network on Bar Rescue.
Those will help us with the hangover, you think?
God. Wait, say it again. Say it again.
You'll love to hear
That's good.
On Bar Rescue.
The first notes you got on Bar Rescue.
On Bar Rescue.
So wait, you had shot the pilot?
So what happened was, and the reason why this is so relevant, because I do tell the story now, is because when I got the notes for the book, because I don't even read books, right? So like, why are you paying me six figures to write a book? Like, it's just the craziest thing, right? Okay. So I'm like, oh my God, I'm so nervous, right? So it's like, I write, it takes me forever to do the two chapters. And in a book thing, you got to send them two chapters first after you start writing. And then they say like, oh, we like your direction. Oh, we'd like to, you consider this. Let's bring you somebody else to talk to or whatever it is, right? And so you're nervous about what happened. So the guy calls me back, my editor. He says, "Hey, listen, we scammed through it. It looks like you're in the right space. I'll send you some detailed notes later. But for now, just keep going the same trajectory. Off you go. And do these notes like after you're done the rest of the book. Just keep going." Okay, good. I'm so excited. Off we go. Then he emails me like 4 days later. "Hey, I got some notes for your first chapter. You know, just don't worry about them for now. Just keep going." So I'm like, okay. And then he emails me like 10 minutes later and he goes, "Oh, hey, by the way, I just don't want you to think that when you read the notes that we aren't happy. Like, we are happy with how it's going. Like, I just don't know if I conveyed that really in my notes."
Okay.
And I was like, oh crap.
Yeah.
So I literally have to pull the car over, like get the phone into like hotspot mode, like pull up the laptop. Like, oh my God, what did he say? And his notes were like, "Oh, I wonder if the audience might like this a little earlier. Oh, great point here. What if we could expand this?" Like the softest, like, "Oh, your talent, Brand," which was just the craziest thing. And so I wrote him the note, which is what the first note we got back on Bar Rescue. I was like, "Hey, just so you know, Koshik, like, here's the first note I ever got back on Bar Rescue on the pilot. It said nothing else, but this is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. Do you even know how to make television?" That was it.
That was the note. You.
That was it.
Yo, that's not a note.
That was the note. That was the pilot.
How was that?
It came from Sharon Levy.
Oh, baller.
Yeah.
Boss.
She is. She's amazing. And I love her.
She messed up on that one, though.
Yeah. No. By the way, it may have been. I don't know if it was the worst piece of shit she's ever seen, but like, it's a pilot. That's the process. And that's the relationship we had.
Maybe that was the note you needed.
No. And by the way, it was like, and by that time, it was with the, you know, it's with the edit team and the guys who are in the mix of it. Like, they're the ones who have to deal with it. I was just like, oh, that's a note. Ooh, ouch.
I aspire to get to a place in life where I can give notes like that, where your note is just like, hey, this is equivalent to a flaming piece of dog shit. Get this the fuck away.
And then
from
it comes
me.
In, and then it and becomes the person Uber, says, and then you're like,
and
damn
no.
It.
And the person says, "Wow, because that person said it, this is a flaming piece of dog shit." They don't even question it for a second. Dude.
Well, and
then they go back and they fix it. By the way, it's just fix it. It's not like, yo, this has no value. Yeah. It's just this is
flaming,
currently
flaming dog shit does have value because it's producing heat.
Ready for this? In its current form, it doesn't. But when it becomes methane and you can utilize, I don't fucking
know,
dude.
The truth is, it also shows you where you are in the pecking order, right? Because if you take that note, that's where you are. And I know producers that if they would have got that note, they would have driven over there and kicked the doors in and like lit the place on fire. And there's producers she would never send that note to. Mm. So that's the sort of the jockeying for a position in Hollywood. And you always want to be the person who, when the network gives you note, you send it back and say, go fuck yourself, take the tape or don't. And there are producers. Craig Piligian does that whenever he wants. Like, if you don't send him notes like that, because he will tear a strip off you and like call your boss and like he'll ruin your life.
Wow.
Because that's the level he plays at, right? And Craig Piligian, I passed on a show at the network and he didn't like that. He went around my boss and went to the head of the entire corporate organization and got in a fight with him and be like, this is total bullshit. And he's like, and the guy bought the show and he came back to us and be like, yeah, well, I bought the show around.
Shut
now
up.
You gotta produce it. And I was like, that guy is a gangster.
Man. Wow.
That's how it works.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I always say, like, I want to be somewhere between where I am on the tough guy and Craig Piligian. Like, how do I get a little closer to the balance?
And that balance, was
the
balance.
Yeah. So
more travel adventure trips.
That's right. That's the only thing. Joy.
I'm going to go take a nap and get joy in that way. Yo, Brad, thanks for coming on, bro.
Listen, man, this is a very, very, very big honor for me. I've been a big fan of you guys for a year.
Appreciate you.
I've watched your guys' career from the beginning because I watched talent. So I saw right at the very beginning, I saw you and your bro and I was just like, these guys are super interesting and nice. I've seen every iteration that you guys have gone through and it's just like
crazy.
I know and I appreciate everything you guys have done and how you've done it. It's super impressive.
Crazy, crazy, bro. Where can they find you on social media?
I am at Brant Penvidic and you can get more about the book at 3 Minute Rule.
Let's go. Nice. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to Impulsive, the number one award-winning podcast in the world. We love you guys and we'll see you next episode. Take
validation,
it easy.
Validation.
Peace.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.